Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush. I'm delighted today to have a super interesting guest. You know, there are some people in freight who have tons of experience, and this guy's got close to a decade. There are some folks in freight who have this great idea, this great angle, or this great feeling. And this guy checks all those boxes. He is the Director of Agent Recruiting at HD Ships. His name is Matt Dahl. And he's also the host of Two Dogs, One Pod. So we're doing a little podcast exchange thing here. Matt, welcome to Hammer Down.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. Excited to be here. Definitely about a 10-year experience in sales, not a couple in logistics, but I just wanted to say that before people came for me. So
No worries. So Matt, what is let's start right there. That's a perfect place. Tell me a little bit about your career path. What is it you do today? And then I can't wait to get into your title.
yeah, so I guess so. I got into sales. College didn't work out for me. I went to actually play chess on a chess scholarship down in Texas. But school wasn't for me, and I needed a way to make money. And I got into sales at 19. I had a brief actually encounter. I usually tell people I got into logistics and when I got my broker job, but I did work for a bus company doing dispatching and routing on demand, which I thought was really fascinating and fun. And I heard people there talk about truck dispatchers too, but they're like, oh, you need experience to do that. And it was fun, but there just wasn't as much money as there were in sales. So I quickly went back to sales. Then when COVID happened, my job in Indiana, I lived in Indiana for 4 years doing sales for a publishing company. And with COVID, we could go back. So I went back to Minnesota and they were going to come back to the office. I was like, well, I need a new career. And I'd heard a couple times recently about kind of combining the fun times from when I was 21 with the dispatching and routing, but also combining the sales. I started as a freight broker at a W-2 company. Went well. I went the agent route. Unfortunately, some things kind of happened with that transition, which allowed me not to stay as a broker. And then I eventually found my way to HD Ships doing recruiting, kind of for the same move that I made, which I really, really enjoyed.
Okay, so I heard you say it in there. You said W-2 employee as opposed to agent, and you're super interesting to me on LinkedIn. Like it, just to be flattering, I literally learn a ton from your posts. You are a very large advocate for the freight agent model. What is given the audience of Hammer Down is, we're trying to talk to kids who are thinking about a career in supply chain. What is the agent model?
Yeah, so agent model is the same job as a broker. So we have two options. You could be cradle to grave, or you could be a split model rep, just like a W-2. So we have an authority on insurance, the TMS, the billing's done for you. The really the exact same as a most W-2s. Now you can get in the semantics of who has better support, and probably depends on what W-2 you're at and what agent program you're at. But the monumental difference is there's no salary. You're just getting 70% of the profit. Whereas generally a W-2, you might get a salary and then maybe 5, 10, 15, I mean, maybe 20, depends if you're split model. So you're a 1099 contractor. So there's no set hours of operation. You're your own boss. And you kind of just have the tools, to support yourself, but there's no salary to, fall back on. So I always tell people it's not really a good idea for your first logistics job, but if you have, some experience, then it's a, can be a good path depending on, the person.
Okay, so now why? I'm guessing the answer is income. But if I'm a salesperson in a W-2 role, perhaps I'm working at a company, perhaps I'm working at Talon Logistics, shameless plug. Why would I consider the agent model as opposed to, working just as an employee?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Money, I thought would be like coming into this role. I thought money would be like the number one, deciding thing for people to become an agent. That's kind of was what pushed me, and I just thought that that was going to be the number one reason. But it's interesting. I would say number one reason I probably get is people who kind of want the freedom, flexibility. They may have a bad boss at their W-2 who's kind of micromanaging how they manage their accounts. Or they don't like the idea of having to, commute a long ways to the office, or different things like that. So I would say kind of the freedom, or some people, they just had kids and they want to be able to be home with their kids. I would say the freedom aspect is probably the number one reason that people become agents. I would say money comes up there. But then a lot of times, even with those two factors, I just posted about it the other day, but the two main reasons I see kind of push people over the edge, because a lot of people know the agent programs out there. They see tons of people talking about it. It's not a really secret anymore. But the number two things lately that have been pushing people over the edge are financial instability. Brokerage having trouble paying their carriers, and factoring companies are pulling out. So they want to protect their customers. And then number two is changing commission structures, because a lot of brokerages are struggling financially. Sometimes they think the easiest thing is to change the commission structures. So those two things have kind of been catalysts. And not to say money is not a motivation, definitely is, but I was kind of wrong on that getting into it. I thought that would be the number one, but I don't think it's number one.
All right. So going the opposite direction, we know, look, you're gonna see freedom, potential for higher earnings, the ability to be a little more ingrained with your customers. If somebody looks around and says, I want to try this agent thing, what are the biggest red flags, or what are the biggest flameouts that tend to happen?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I try to keep it level in talking about this, but there's a lot of people that, I think I posted 10 scenarios I wouldn't recommend being an agent. You have to have a discipline to be able to work from home and not have a boss. Some people need, somebody asking you how many calls you're making a day and, overlooking you in that scenario. And also, I mean, you'd need a, it can vary. I mean, it varies depending on, your book of business and how experienced you are. But I mean, I always recommend you're better off. You shouldn't just hop into, from like a trucking company or from a dispatcher and just hop straight into being an agent role. Because the income, it can take a while to build a book of business. You have no book of business a couple months, there's no salary to fall back on. So I always ask people, and I'd say the majority are coming with the book of business, but our number two agent had no book of business. They had a ton of experience though, and they had built up a profit book of business a month in the past. So they knew kind of how to do it, and they had the financial, security to go a little bit. But I would say kind of the number one red flag is just kind of lack of experience, in that regard.
Got it. So Matt, if I were, if I'm, if I swap to a 1099, which theoretically, simple terms is basically a freelancer, am I able as an agent to work with multiple trucking companies? Am I selling competitors against each other? How do you draw those lines as an agent?
Yeah, so every agent program is different. One kind of reason I like recruiting for HD Ships is we don't have an exclusivity agreement. So what that means is now we have our LTL platform going live this month, but before that we weren't really that strong with LTL. So like theoretically, it wouldn't be fair for an agent to come here and then say, hey, you can't, they have a big LTL opportunity and our rates aren't competitive, so sorry, you're out of luck. So as long as we know about it, we can have an agent moving their truckload and drayage here and moving their LTL at a different agent program. No, I'd say it's kind of a mix. Some agent programs do have exclusivity clauses, meaning you can't be working for multiple agent programs at the same time. And I would say 90% of agents aren't doing that anyways. But there are some kind of unique cases. Like, I guess that's a selling point to some of the larger agent programs I'm selling against. I always tell them, like, hey, you can try out a customer here. You don't have to leave your current agent program. Say there's a customer it's already taken at your other agent program, or it's something not working out and you want to just test out a customer, which there's not a lot of jobs you can kind of just test out before you see how it is. That's one thing I like about not having an exclusivity contract. I'd say that's about 50-50 between agent programs. Some have exclusivity, some don't.
Okay, gotcha. So I'm with you so far. This is really interesting. Matt, we also talked about the fact that you're a co-host on a podcast. Let's talk about the show.
Yeah, that one's it's been a lot of fun. I think that's I've kind of learned more about the industry doing that probably than I did as a broker. As a broker, I mean, seafood, reefer, I was in a very niche that I knew well, but a lot of aspects of the industry I had zero idea about, and probably even if I had been a broker, for 5 years, wouldn't have known about, because I just knew my clients and what they did. But the fun part about the podcast is, we've talked to different freight tech companies, shippers, CEOs of brokerages. I'm always learning new stuff. That's probably been the most, fun aspect of it for me. I've just learned a lot doing it.
Oh, hey, you're preaching to the choir on that one. I totally understand. So, hey, one of my favorite questions to ask guests on the show is, If you're talking to a newer recent college grad and they say, Matt, I'm thinking about supply chain or I'm thinking about a logistics career, what's the piece of advice you would give that kid?
Don't sign a non-compete would be my number one thing. And before you look at a company too, reach out on LinkedIn, ask, I even tell potential agents to do that too. And reach out to a couple people at the company you're interviewing at and ask them like how things are going. I think whether you're being looking for an agent role or you're looking for a W-2 sales role, that's a big thing.
Okay, you mentioned non-competes, and I know you've got some opinions on these. So
Hit me. Why are non-competes evil?
I think it limits a lot of people. We're just talking about college grads, and there's a lot of people who get out of college. They may see a company at a career fair, sounds like this great idea to be a freight broker, buried somewhere in their paperwork. And then things change at companies, commission structure, leadership, bad boss, and they're like, oh, I want to go work for a different company. And then they're no longer able to. Now, non-solicits, I think, are different. I mean, I think they're understandable. I mean, obviously, a lot of sales reps, myself included, may not be a fan, but pretty much most brokerages have non-solicits, and that's pretty standard. I don't think those are going to go anywhere, and I think it's debatable whether they should. But non-competes, I don't really think. I mean, a lot of it's interesting in Colombia. I was out visiting Colombia. Like, non-competes don't exist in that. I don't think even non-solicits exist in that country, but the U.S. is kind of unique with the whole non-compete thing, especially the logistics industry. I mean, I've been in sales since 19. That was the first. Before getting into logistics, I didn't really even understand non-competes were a thing. And I think a lot of, recent college grads, they've never had a job, never been in sales. They don't have any idea really what that is.
So let me make sure we're explaining this accurately here. A non-compete is a clause in a contract that says I cannot go work for a competitor. A non-solicit is I can go work for a competitor, but I can't call my current customers. Is that the easiest way
Yeah,
to think
that's
about it?
a great explanation.
Okay, perfect. Cool. So non-solicits make sense. Non-competes kind of brutal, kind of awful.
Yeah. And I understand the argument too. I mean, there's a lot of people in the agent space who don't think non-solicits should exist, and the customer could just work who they want and who the relationship is. But I also know a lot of freight brokerage owners, and I mean, you could see that from, their perspective. You train somebody, you don't want your customers, going off somewhere else too. So, I think that one's a lot more of a complicated issue depending who you talk about. But I think most people overall that I've met in the industry are against the non-compete part. Majority, I
Got
would
it.
say.
So, Matt, one thing I think is really kind of fun. You and I have been lucky enough to meet at a couple of different conferences and shake hands. What's kind of your conference schedule and approach?
I wish I would have like some like great conference approach. I hadn't really been to one, so my approach might be different now. I was just kind of going to network and meeting people and kind of like a new experience for me. So I didn't have like some like super game plan, especially doing what I was doing, with agent recruiting. I mean, there's not like potential agents just like kind of wandering around there. Like maybe if you're like a tech vendor, going to one. I was surprised it manifested. Two people saw I was going and messaged me that they wanted to talk about BCS. I didn't have that, but I would just say, network. I mean, not really have a. I mean, I was kind of. You can kind of tell the difference between tech companies I noticed at those conferences who are like trying to hard sell you and like, or the ones that are just trying to make connections. Maybe they're still selling, but not in like a kind of in your face, kind of direct way. So it's kind of interesting to see kind of the differences there. Obviously, I think one approach is a lot better than the other. We actually just signed a contract with a tech vendor who took the laid back approach. I met him at BCS, and we had lunch, and it wasn't really a need. We didn't have the volume yet for his particular service, and we had some potential agents that need that service now. And he was the first person I thought to. We actually just signed the contract with them last week. So I mean, there's some long term, kind of goes with what I was saying earlier about kind of long term and the kind of the approach I think it's best at conferences, but.
Yeah, makes sense. I would tend to agree with that. Anna, is there anything we haven't touched on, anything I haven't asked that you want to make sure we get a plug in for?
No, that's not nothing that comes offhand. I guess conferences are really fun. If you're new to the industry, I've never been to a conference. I know you and I have met at a conference. So many people from LinkedIn. That was probably one of the most enjoyable parts of the, I went to Manifest and the Broker Carrier Summit. There's a lot of people from LinkedIn that I'd never met in person. So if you have an opportunity to do that, I would highly, highly recommend it. Also, sometimes the ROI can come, you know, much later. I had somebody I met at an industry event, you know, last October, recently signed as an agent. It was kind of cool because we had already met in person and never really pitched him on the agent thing. He had just reached out. So, I mean, I think some people kind of look at maybe conferences like, oh, well, where's the immediate ROI? But there's some long-term ROI and it's just, you know, fun to get to meet a lot of people. So I'd encourage anybody, if you haven't been to a conference, go to a free conference.
I understand, man. Hey, so Matt, if somebody who's watching this episode or listening to this episode, rather than on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, any place to get their podcasts, why does every podcaster say exactly that, wherever you get your podcast? What's the best way for somebody to get in touch with you, sir?
I would say LinkedIn. It's kind of interesting. I would say text, but I probably check my LinkedIn messages even more than my text and email. So, you know, look me up, Matt Dahl, HD Ships on LinkedIn.
All right, man. Terrific. Appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.